Blog Talk Radio.
PhD from William and Mary, the College of William and Mary. Who attended William and Mary besides me? Thomas Jefferson. Oh, yeah. All right. Today, we got a lot to talk about today. Today is December 10th, 2010. Washington, D.C., the United States of America still, until further notice. And then planet Earth, third planet from the sun. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. I am not a medical doctor. I am a PhD. I have a history, a degree in history from William and Mary. Okay. Wow. A filibuster is going down right now in the House of Representatives over this tax deal. It's a big old mess. It's happening right now. I can't believe it. One would think that these tax cuts would go down right, but Democrats are diametrically opposed to allowing people to keep their own money. They believe that it's the government's job to take what money you earn and distribute it. It's called redistribution of wealth, and it's in full swing under this administration, the Obama administration. It's in full swing. An old college pal of Obama has continued commenting on Obama's Marxist ideology back in college. John Drew was a contemporary of Obama at Occidental College, and a Marxist himself. In fact, Drew was a well-known campus communist when Obama was introduced to him as one of us. Obama was already an ardent Marxist when I met him in the fall of 1980, said Drew, going on record. Drew is certainly cognizant of the gravity of his statement. I know it's incendiary to say this, he says, but Obama was basically a Marxist-Leninist. He noted how Obama, in Dreams of My Father, stated that when he got to college, he attended socialist conferences and hung out with Marxist professors. But what Obama did not explain or clarify, says Dr. Drew, is that Obama was in 100% total agreement with these Marxist professors. I asked Drew where precisely he believes Obama stands today. Of course, Drew no longer knows Obama, and his main goal in reaching out was to clarify where Obama stood at Occidental, which is information that cannot be ignored. Nope. That said, he did tell me this. there are a lot of brands of Marxism. That was one of the key ingredients of my argument with the young Barack Obama. I see evidence of a continued commitment to Marxist ideology every time President Obama traces the furor of the public to underlying economic conditions and inevitable changes taking place in society. In the Marxist model, the economy is the driving force behind change in the other spheres of society. Drew shared those thoughts last spring. More recently, however, we had an even more illuminating conversation when I had the opportunity to interview Drew while I was guest hosting the Glenn Meekham program, a terrific radio talk show broadcast from Pittsburgh. Here are the edited excerpts of what Drew told me on the air in October. Drew, as far as I can tell, I'm the only person in Obama's extended circle of friends who is willing to speak out and verify that he was a Marxist-Leninist in his sophomore year of college from 1980 to 1981. I met him because I graduated from Occidental College in 1979, and I was back at Occidental visiting a girlfriend. Well, was Occidental a radical left politics? Was he known for that? Would that have been an attraction to Obama? Well, just think about what's going on right now. There is so much evidence that Obama is a socialist hyphen Marxist in everything he does and says, but somehow we still elected him. Why did we elect a socialist, Marxist person into the White House? Why? Was it because that we were so fed up with George Bush, that George Bush was such a horrible president, that we wanted change so badly that we decided it's best to ignore the fact that Barack Obama is a socialist and just put him in office because maybe he'll do some good? I spoke with a friend during the campaign, and I said to my friend, Obama is a socialist. And I believe that he will bring this country to its knees, that he will cause the collapse of our government as we know it. And she said to me, governments come and go. Superpowers come and go. Maybe it's time. Maybe it's time for this superpower to go. Maybe it's our time. And don't you live here too? Aren't you a part of this society? But as I stated yesterday, with Obama's ascension to the presidency, all of my Marxist socialist friends have decided to come right out of the woodwork and do their thing and talk that talk and walk that walk. I had no idea of the types of people politically that I was dealing with all of my life. I am amazed daily by the number of people I call friend who are socialist, Marxist, communist. And before Obama's election, I knew none of this. And even in the media, we classified folks at MSNBC, CNN, ABC, CBS as being liberal. And that's all they gave us, right? Liberalism. And now a lot of the hosts are coming out and saying that they are socialist. And they're not ashamed of it. They're not ashamed of it at all, and it's amazing to me. It seems to me that when Obama became president, folks came out and decided that they were going to let us know who they really are. I've had friends walk up to me and say, I'm a socialist. I believe in social justice. I believe in redistribution of wealth. The other day I was speaking to a friend who said that she was a socialist and that she believed in redistribution of wealth, a well-known lawyer, making plenty of bread. And I said to her, redistribution of whose wealth? I mean, as far as I know, and I've known you for a long time, this is me having a conversation with her, you make a pretty good salary. What parts of your salary or the money that you make on a yearly basis are you willing to part with to have redistributed? And by the way, we're about to walk from the courthouse over to this restaurant here, and we're going to encounter quite a few derelicts. They used to call them hobos back in the 20s and 30s, and then they switched over to bums, and then they started calling them something else. Now they're not even called bums anymore. You can't call them that. You got to call them something that's challenged, like unemployed challenged person or something like that. So I said to her, I would like to see, we've got 4 blocks to walk to get to where we're going. I would like to see you go ahead and go through your purse and redistribute some of that wealth you've got in your pocket. And, of course, she declined to do so. I said, no, we're going to walk here about 4 blocks, and there are going to be a lot of folks who are going to need some money. So if you're for redistribution of wealth, set the example and start redistributing some of your own wealth. And she, of course she wouldn't do it, because folks like her are always interested in redistribution of wealth as long as it's not their wealth, as long as it's not her money. I happen to know for a fact that she's got 2 fine big screen TVs and a couple of smaller ones, and she's got about 4 or 5 computers. And I asked her, you're just one person. What do you need all that stuff for? Why don't you give me one of those TVs and I'll take it down to the shelter? Oh no, okay. Every excuse. I heard 10 excuses as to why she wouldn't do that, because it's all about taking somebody else's money and redistributing it. Someone else's money. And that's what they're all about. So now Bernie Sanders is on the House floor right now, filibustering, and he's calling rich people greedy, and every other name that he can think of that doesn't have that's not profanity laced, because he believes that a person who goes to school, who punches all the tickets, goes to college, gets good grades, does the right thing, stays out of jail, doesn't commit any crimes, works hard at his craft, works hard in his business or builds his own business, goes to medical school or goes to law school, does his thing, does all the right things and attempts to acquire what we would like to call the American dream, only to have the government say, you've made too much money. You've made too much money, and you've got to give the excess money to us, and we'll decide how much that is. Now, back to Mr. Obama. And I'm not going to call him president today because I'm just really not interested. Mr. Obama, the ultimate narcissist. In presidencies past, presidents would use the word we. Well, what we're trying to do is this, and what we're trying to do is that. And what we want to do in this administration is, and what we'd like to see happen in this administration is this. It was always we, wasn't it? Think back. Think back. George W. Clinton. George Sr. Ronald Reagan. Go all the way back to any president you can remember giving a speech. And it was always we. Then why is it with this president it's I? It's always I. Have you heard him ever say we? Ever? I don't think so. Maybe once or twice. I've never heard him say it, but I'm sure it had to be, right? Once or twice he said we. The call-in number is 347-884-8500. If you can recall Obama ever using the word we, please call in and share that. In an extraordinary scene at the awarding of the Nobel Peace Prize in Oslo Friday morning, the prize went to imprisoned Chinese dissident Liu Xiaobo. I hope I pronounced that right. Who was barred by the Chinese government from attending the ceremony. It was the first time since 1935 when the prize went to a winner imprisoned in one of Adolf Hitler's concentration camps that the Peace Prize winner did not appear personally to accept the award. Liu's absence was symbolized by an empty chair on stage. So on this notable occasion, the White House released a statement from President Obama on the awarding of the prize to Lua in absentia. And this is how Obama's statement began. Talk about narcissism. Have you heard? Here it comes. 1 year ago, I was humbled to receive the Nobel Peace Prize, an award that speaks to our highest aspirations and that has been claimed by giants of history and courageous advocates who have sacrificed for freedom and justice all throughout. Now, there is no mention of the recipient that he is honoring. It's about him, Obama. He stated 1 year ago that I was humbled. Why is it about him? This is embarrassing. This is the president of the United States. Thin-skinned, narcissistic, cocky, arrogant. Not very attractive in a man, not very attractive in a president. Well, I'm a couple of those things, so. But nevertheless, critics have often said that it's all about him, that he has a tendency to reference himself no matter what the subject he is discussing. Could he do any more to prove him right, folks? But, just to be fair, he was slightly humble, because in the following sentence he said, Mr. Liu Xiaobo is far more deserving of this award than I was. The first time he's uttered a true statement out of his mouth in quite some time, because he certainly did not deserve a Nobel Peace Prize. 2 years in the Senate, where he did absolutely nothing the whole time, ascended to the presidency, and he's a mediocre, if not very poor president so far. And he received the Nobel Peace Prize. How long was he in office when he received that prize? 6 months, maybe? It was bizarre. It was a bizarre event. He knew he didn't deserve it. He should have been embarrassed and declined to accept it. It's embarrassing to have Obama as our presidency. embarrassing. From audacity to animosity, Wall Street Journal column. We have not in our lifetime seen a president in this position. He spent his first year losing the center, which elected him, and his second losing his base, which is supposed to provide his troops. There isn't much left to lose, which may explain Tuesday's press conference, where he went off and just went wild and said all kinds of crazy things. It was the most bizarre press conference by a president that I've witnessed in my lifetime. And I was born in 62, and I started watching presidential press conferences and such on TV when I was about 10 or 12. President Obama was supposed to be announcing an important compromise, as he put it, on tax policy. Normally, a president, having agreed with the opposition on something big, would go through certain expected motions. He would laud the specific virtues of the plan, show graciousness toward the negotiators, and on the other side, graciousness implies that you won, and refers respectively to potential critics as people who surely come around once they are fully exposed to the deep merits of the plan. Instead, and I savored every moment of his press conference because he just looked so pained, like he had a corn cob up his butt or a broom handle, bristles first. So instead, Mr. Obama said essentially that he hates the deal he just agreed to. No class whatsoever. Classless guy. Wow. Hates the people he made the deal with. Hates even more the people who criticize it. His statement was startling in the breadth of its animosity. Republicans are hostage takers, he said, who worship a holy grail of tax cuts for the wealthy. Class warfare, anybody? That seems to be their central economic doctrine. Now, let's just leave this for a moment. Wasn't Obama supposed to be the great communicator, second great communicator to Reagan? He was supposed to bring everybody together. He was supposed to usher in a new era in Washington where there's cooperation and people working together to solve big problems, where we all got together to do the damn thing. But that's not how it worked out, is it? So you folks who voted for hope and change, how is that hope and change working out for you? The guy is a clown and obviously becoming seriously unhinged. You know, it's scary that this person who behaved the way that he did and behaves the way that he does is the actual president of the United States, the most powerful man on the planet, keeper of the nuclear codes, commander-in-chief of our great military. And he's on the podium the other day throwing a tantrum. Wow. Now, as for the left, they ignore his accomplishments and are always looking for weakness and compromise. They are sanctimonious, purist, and just want to feel good about themselves. In a difficult world, they cling to their ideal positions and constant charges of betrayals. This is what Obama said about his base, about the left, about the congressman. The president must have thought that distancing himself from left and right would make him more attractive to the center. But you get credit for going to the center only if you say the centrist position you've just embraced is right. If you suggest, as the president did, that the seemingly moderate plan you agreed to is awful and you'll try to rescind it in 2 years, you won't leave the Senate thinking he's our guy. You'll leave them thinking, note to self, remove Obama in 2 years. Right now, President Obama is in a press conference with President Clinton. I wonder what they're saying. I can't hear it from right here. Oh, well. So, as I was saying, Okay. So what they're talking about is the bipartisan agreement on the tax bill as it stands right now, from what I can gather. So he's now alienated his base. He's alienated the left. He's alienated the right. He's all alone. It's just him and his horrible-looking wife and those two ugly kids of his in the White House and the assorted hanger-ons and aides and flunkies. Because what Obama has accomplished so far in the last 2 years is to alienate everybody. Wasn't he supposed to be baby Jesus, where the seas would rescind and the skies would clear and the clouds would go away and everybody would sing kumbaya and we'd all love him? In politics, the angry person is generally understood to be the loser, which is why politicians on TV always try not to seem angry. And politics is always, at the end of the day, a game of addition, not subtraction. But maybe Obama thinks so much of himself that he believes that he can get away with being angry. And that because he's the deity, he's our savior, he can be angry. And we're supposed to say, oh, no, we got him angry. Oh, maybe his plan is right. Maybe he's on. We don't want to get the Lord angry. Our Lord and Savior, Barack Hussein Obama. We don't want to get him angry. Ooh, the great and powerful Oz, Obama Oz, is angry. So I guess he thought he could break precedent and be an angry God. But Mr. Obama's problem is not only with the left of his party, Democrat professionals, people who do the work of politics day by day, don't see him as a bad man or a sellout, but they scratch their heads over him and privately grouse. They don't understand a Democrat president who, in the midst of a great recession in our modern welfare state, doesn't know how to win support. But wasn't he supposed to be that guy? Isn't that why the vast majority of the electorate elected him? Because he led us to believe that he would be a transformational president, that he would be the guy to bring everybody together. There would be no red states and no blue states under the United States, but of course it's just him now. The other night, Pennsylvania's Democrat Governor Ed Rendell was on Hardball, sounding reasonable on the subject of Mr. Obama. But I thought his eyes, his visage, his professionally pleasant face were screaming, those crazy birthers are wrong. He's not from another country. He's from another galaxy. He doesn't do politics like any normal person. Yes, because he is the Lord. He is our Savior. So he can do things differently, and we're supposed to love it and accept it. And it's all good in the hood. So apparently, Barack Hussein Obama can do things politically that anybody else couldn't get away with. The left has been honestly disappointed in Mr. Obama. You can see that today. The left, the middle, the far left, the communists, the Marxists, the Leninists, they're all upset with him. The Republicans, like me, we're not upset with you because you're making an ass out of yourself, Barack. You're screwing up so bad and you're revealing who you really are and what you are for all to see. And I love it. I love it. So being that the left is disappointed in Mr. Obama because he did not come through as they think he should have in a myriad of ways, meaning the public option, closing Gitmo, now this tax plan where rich people, they get to keep their own money. That is the ultimate betrayal. Obama has betrayed the American people and the left. Because he is enacting, or rather supporting, a tax plan that will allow people to keep their own money and not have to turn it over to the United States government. He should be tried for treason, as far as the left is concerned. He's not a Democrat. He can't be a Democrat if he's supporting a plan that will in any way allow rich people to keep their money. Oh, and that death tax. If I have a nice estate, I can't leave that to my children. If I die, I'd have to give it all away now. Because if I die before giving it all up, then the government's going to take 50% of it or more. And Obama is supporting a plan that will limit the amount the government could take if I die and want to leave my estate to my children. And that is blasphemous as well. Why don't they just take his ass out of the White House and hang his ass in a tall oak tree? Because he, according to the left, he has betrayed America. He has betrayed the world by suggesting that the top 2% of the people who generate wealth in this country should get to keep some of their money. Well, let's just take Obama out to back and beat the shit out of him. Excuse my language. Because he has become reasonable. And the left certainly will not allow that. Certainly not. So now, the left does not say Mr. Obama has been revealed to be at heart a conservative or Republican. Most of them know he's one of them. His worldview is more or less theirs. His assumptions are theirs. Does anyone doubt he would have included a public option in healthcare if he thought he could have? He judged that he couldn't. He didn't have the numbers in the Senate. It isn't an argument about philosophy or ideology. It's only an argument about what's practical and possible. And it was not possible to get a public option in the healthcare. And so he couldn't do it. And thank God for that. Thank goodness for that. So, now, some of the left are arguing that if only the president had talked more and more passionately, if he'd worked it out, worked it harder, he could have brought the country to support his leftist, Leninist, Marxist ideologies. If only he had come out and mesmerized the people like he did on election day or during the campaign and convinced them that, give me your money. Give me your money. I want control. I want to control you. I want to control the world. I want to start with America. If he'd been able to get people to believe in his Marxist-Leninist programs, but he couldn't. The general public has seen the president out there for 2 years talking and promoting a generally leftist direction. Voters demonstrated in elections through 2009 and 2010 that a general leftist direction is not what we want. All of this, the disenchantment of the left, the confusion of the party's professionals, has led to increased talk of a blasphemy. It's led to increased talk of a primary challenge to Mr. Obama in 2012. Yeah, because the left is pulling out their hair right now on the Senate floor, on the chamber of the House, and filibustering because Obama is attempting to enact a plan that will allow people to keep a lot of their money. I mean, that's really all this was about. That's really what it's all about. The left doesn't want us to keep our own money. They want us to give, to work hard, make money, and then give half of it to the state so that they can dole it out to somebody else. I mean, when you break it down to its very basic form, that's all it is. It's a shakedown. Because if they don't tax us, and if they tax us and we don't pay, then we wind up going to jail. So it's just a big old shakedown. And the left, you know, it's not, they're talking today about, well, if the Republicans were really all that serious about the deficit, they would go with this plan. They would not be going with this plan. They would not want this to go through if they were serious about the deficit. That is such crap. And here's why. The Democrats are not at all concerned about the deficit. If they were, they wouldn't have enacted that seriously flawed health care plan. What they're concerned about is the fact that nearly $1 trillion won't be coming into the government coffers for them to dole out, for them to spend on their pet projects. Obama's mad about it too. He's really upset because allowing rich people, as he calls them, anybody making over $250,000 is rich, according to President Obama and a lot of Democrats. Allowing rich people to keep their money is sacrilege to him. Because what he wants is, you know what? Here's the thing. Can I be candid with you right now? Can we talk? Let's talk about it. If you and I believed that the money we pay in taxes would go toward bringing down the deficit so that my children and my grandchildren would have easier lives down the road, I would gladly pay it. But that's not what Obama wants. That's not what the Democrats want. They want me to pay taxes so that they can take it and spend it or redistribute it. That's what they want. And that's why they're upset. That's why they're upset. Because heaven forbid they not have the money coming in for their pet projects. And those greedy old rich people making 250,000 plus, we want that jack. We want that bread. You shouldn't get to have a second home. Because I heard one Democrat, one senator say that, well, a person making over $250,000, a rich person making over $1 million a year, will save roughly $8,000 a year. It's not like they need the money. It's not like they, well, I mean, what are they going to do with that, with $8,000? You know, this is crazy. It's absurd was what it is. It's his $8,000. It's not yours. Since when did our government, have I missed something? When did our government come to the conclusion that or have drawn a line in the sand that suggests that they know when I have made enough money and how much money I get to keep? When did that happen? Collins, Kay Collins, I don't know how much money she makes, but I think that probably she would be, she's a good friend of mine, girlfriend. I would be surprised if she would appreciate Barack Obama or anybody else telling her that she's made enough money that maybe she could get by on $25,000 a year. And whatever else she makes, you got to send that over to us. And if you don't, you're going to jail. I'm going to put you in federal prison. That's all? Wow. Okay. I'll keep that in mind. 8K is a decent engagement ring. Well, that's like a half a carat where I come from. I mean, especially if it's a Leo. Okay. Well. All right. I'll keep that in mind. I'll keep that in my pocket. So, all of this disenchantment on the left, the confusion of the party's professionals, has led to increased talk of a primary challenge to Mr. Obama. Yes, she is. She is my girlfriend, Jody K. Collins. And here's to the president's position would be without parallel. When Pat Buchanan challenged an incumbent president in his party's presidential primary in 1992, he was going at George W. Bush from the right. Mr. Bush's base wasn't the right. It was the party's center. His support came from people who said, I am a conservative, but I am a Republican. I'm a Republican. Mr. Bush wasn't challenged from his base, which is why he lost to Bill Clinton, a lot of people believe. When Ted Kennedy challenged a sitting president of his party in 1980, he was going at Jimmy Carter from the left. But Mr. Carter's base wasn't the left. It was more or less the party's center, which is why we got my man and yours, Ronald Wilson Reagan, God rest his soul, the second greatest president in the history of our country. No, the third. I got to go with Washington, number one. Lincoln, number two. And Ronald Wilson Reagan, or as we called him in the Marine Corps in 1982, Ronnie Reagan. So when Ronald Reagan challenged the sitting president of his party in 1976, he was going at Gerald Ford from the right. Are you following me here? Like Mr. Bush, Ford's base wasn't the right. It was the party's establishment. So what we have here is, if there's a challenge to Barack Hussein Obama in 2012, he can bend over and kiss his narrow ass goodbye. And if it will get him out of the White House, I'll be glad to do it. If it will get him out of the White House and a Republican in there, I will kiss Barack Obama's narrow black ass. Yes, I would. Dude's got to go. 2012 can't come soon enough. The Democrat Party is stuck. Their problem is not, as some have said, that they don't have anyone of significant stature to challenge the president. Russ Feingold and Howard Dean have said they aren't interested. But a challenger can always be found. Or one can emerge. I like that word. If anyone marks this political age, it's that anyone can emerge. Barack Hussein Obama emerged out of nowhere. Sucks all to be damned. If the election of Barack Obama teaches us one thing, just one thing, it's that experience matters. I mean, dude was a community organizer, then a state senator where he rarely attended. He was rarely in attendance. And when he was in attendance, he voted present most of the time. Then became a senator through dubious means. Was in the Senate for 2 years where 80% of the time he voted, what, present? Yes. Then, because my guy W sucked so bad his last 3 years in office, and I don't have a problem saying it, people were clamoring for change that they can believe in. And just like when Bill Clinton ran for the presidency opposite George Bush Sr., folks were like, wow, this guy is so cool. This guy is, wow. You know, he was a rock star. Bill Clinton was, in my opinion, our first presidential rock star. Well, Barack Obama came along and doubled down on that. And folks were like, he can't be worse than W. But he is. Would the previous president, George W. Bush, behave in such a crass, mean-spirited manner? For all the talk about how not too bright his bulb is lit and how he was a C student at Yale, and even though he received his MBA from Harvard, he was a C student. Little do people know, just as a sidebar, a C student at Harvard is an A student at, say, the Ohio State University. But nevertheless, he was a C student at Harvard. Would George Bush behave in such a babyish, whiny manner? Had he ever? No, never. This guy is such a neophyte. It is beyond the pale. His behavior, these last couple of press conferences, was atrocious. He reminded me of a spoiled child who didn't get his way and just went on a big old whining party. Completely and utterly unprofessional. Folks around the world have to be viewing this guy as a moron. And folks were saying how really smart he is. How brilliant Obama is. He can't muster up enough brilliance to act cool and calm and sell this idea. He has to go around with name-calling, hostage-takers, and even folks in his own party is not fully comprehending what it was he was trying to do. As if, of course, he's the end of all beings. He's the know-it-all. He's the genius. And folks simply just don't understand what he's trying to do for us. We just don't appreciate him. And God damn us for not appreciating our deity, our Lord, Barack Hussein Obama. We don't appreciate what he's done for us. He's delivered health care, an historic health care legislation. Hell, we had historic things happen before, like wars and famine and pillaging and burning and murders. And all these things were historic. That doesn't make them good. So when that mummified Nancy Pelosi, and doesn't she look like she's stuffed? I mean, the House of Wax lady. When she stands up in the House of Representatives and talks about historic health care legislation, well, that don't mean jack to me, old lady. Indeed, we are brilliant. But Obama thinks that we're all a bunch of Homer Simpsons. Folks in his administration were quoted as saying so, and people from the union bosses were saying that saying that Americans were a bunch of Homer Simpsons. All we need to do is just tell them what we want them to do. So back to Obama and a possible challenge to his regime in 2012. There's only one Democrat that I can think of who could possibly challenge Mr. Obama for the nomination successfully and win the general election, and that's Hillary Clinton. And right now, Hillary, she's looking mighty damn good. And can I tell you right now, I had a crush on her. I did have a crush on Hillary back when Bill Clinton was first elected. The whole headband thing, I kind of dug it. She got that whole Mary Tyler Moore thing happening, which I really do appreciate. I don't know why. Perhaps it's a sick fetish. But I dug it. And right now, Hillary's looking mighty fine to me. As liberal as her white ass is. Oh. But what are the Democrats to do? If you're stuck with a president, you try to survive either with him or individually, in spite of him. Some of the Democrats would try to bring him back. But that would be great Democrat drama of 2011, saving Obama's butt. The White House itself is probably thinking the Republicans can save him by overstepping, by alienating moderates. But so far, on domestic matters, they're looking pretty calm and sober. They didn't crow at the tax compromise. For instance, even though they knew the left is correct, it wasn't a compromise, it was a bow. And we all know how good at bowing Obama is. That dude can bow. He can bow down. What a clown. Barack Hussein Obama. This is what you all get for electing a guy who has no idea what he's doing. This is what you get. This is what happens when gods bleed. President Obama, who has often been compared with some justification to a fictional self-made man or Fitzgerald's Jay Gatsby. But after this week's tax deal and the outrage reaction to it, including by Obama himself. Perhaps the most apt comparison is with Daniel Devereaux in Kipling's The Man Who Would Be King. Think about it. For those of you who attended the proper schools, you probably read that. If you didn't, then you didn't. Devereaux, as you may recall, is an intrepid British soldier of fortune who, along with his friend Peachy Cochran, conquers Khorasan in the Hindu Kush and is hailed as a god king. But his luck runs out when he takes a wife. Yep. It's a wife that always does it to you, or a girlfriend. He takes a wife and tries to kiss her. The girl bites his lip and he bleeds. And then Devereaux is sacrificed by the outraged natives. And Peachy tortured because gods don't bleed. If you're invincible, then you're invincible. But if you bleed, then you're no longer invincible. Think about it. Pick up the book if you did not attend the right school. The president should read that story, if only as a cautionary tale of ambition, overreach, and what happens when the unrealistic expectations of true believers are dashed like they are now, where he's got even liberals making fun of him and wondering what the hell he's doing. And I love it. I'm going to tell you right now, I love every minute of it. I'm glued to my television. I've got 3 TVs going on all at once. Obama has famously characterized himself as a blank canvas on which other people can project their hopes and dreams and aspirations. Oh, how sweet of him. And it was, in fact, a blank canvas that took the oath of office in 2009, a man nearly unknown just a few years before, whose past he himself had mythologized in the book Dreams from My Father. Maybe I needed to drink some water before I said that. Let me try that again. Let me have a little water here. Okay. Whose path he himself mythologized, there we go, in Dreams from My Father. A father who was never around, by the way, which is probably why he's so narcissistic and unhinged. Because when daddy wasn't there, well, that's a big problem for some of us. You can always tell a man, a troubled man, from a man who is well-grounded when you ask, was your daddy in the household? Did you have a dad who was there for you? And the guy says, yes, I did. And you said, well, I can really tell because you seem very well grounded versus some moron who goes around half-cocked and becoming a jerk all the time like Barack Obama did the last few days. You can tell daddy wasn't there to take him to the fair. Daddy wasn't there. So, we're running out of time here. I'm gonna have to lengthen this show because we're really running out of time, and I really have so much more I want to talk about. So, I hope y'all have a wonderful weekend. I hope to talk to you again on Monday. Kay Collins, I love you, and I will talk to you later too. Love everybody. Have a pleasant weekend, and let's have a candy cane Christmas. Sweet. It can be.
driving snow. Apple cider warming on the stove. Tinsel twinkling everywhere. Holly hanging on the stairs. It must be Christmas Eve. Angel sitting high upon a tree, watching over presents patiently. Milk and cookies on a plate. Santa Claus is on his way. The kids should be fast asleep, but sleigh bells are ringing in their heads, twisting like little tops in their beds, trying to sleep, but it's no use with puffs.
Christmas, sweet as it can.